Hello and welcome to Game Brain, a podcast about our board game group. I'm Ben Mandelker, and I'm here joined by two of my favorite co-hosts, one of whom, actually I have recorded with you, but a newer co-host. But first we have Candace Harris. Hi, Candace.
Hey,
how are you?
Hey, great, Ben. Doing really well.
Good. Welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks. Yeah, great. It's been a while.
I know it's been about 6 months or so, but you're doing great. You're killing it with the Board Game Geek podcast.
Thank you.
Everyone
Thank
should
you.
Subscribe to that one.
Thanks.
I would say it's like a sister podcast, but I don't know if that's official. But I consider considering that one of
it's
our
in the
hosts,
family, right?
One of our hosts is doing it too. And then Jordan, welcome, Jordan.
Thank you.
Our new host from this. When did you start? May? June?
Something like that, yeah. A few months ago.
Our new baby host, Jordan. Hi, Jordan.
Hi. Glad to be on. Glad to be on with Candace. First time recording with Candace.
Yeah, yeah.
And also, Candace's podcast this coming week is going to be an Essen preview, right?
Yeah.
So you guys should all check that out.
Yeah, everyone go check that out. Well, we have actually a pretty big roster of things to talk about. We don't have a huge amount of time, so we're not going to banter. Yeah, we are talkers. We're going to try not to banter quite as much, but we have a lot of games to discuss. We're really excited. The three of us just played a game of Voidfall, which I know
fresh,
you guys have been
fresh.
Very fresh. We have brain fresh, still buzzing.
Yeah,
Jordan was before we started. He was like, my brain is still in Voidfall. Now you're in podcast fall.
Yes. Void slowly podcast. Easing in.
We have so many fun things that have happened in just 1 week. Let's see. Where should we start in terms of like new plays, interesting plays? I know that we have actually recently been playing a lot of games that we've been talking about on the podcast. But you guys have not really been able to weigh in very much and also discover a new game to you, Candace. This is actually not a game that we've already been talking about, but you just played Trajan for the first time,
right? Yeah. So last weekend after we played Magnate, after you taught me Magnate, and we had that epic game of building our city up,
yes.
Simon and I, my friend Simon, ended up breaking out Trajan. And it's crazy because Trajan's such an old game. And when I was at Strategicon a couple weeks ago, someone had it on the table. I'm walking by. And I was like, what is that game? That looks so cool. So I stopped over to take a look and they were like, oh, it's Trajan. And they had the geek up bits too, which I was like, oh, these components are nice. And I was like, okay, that tracks.
Yeah.
And then, so.
Stefan Feld from
2011
game.
Or something like that, maybe.
It's an old, have you played it, Jordan?
Never played it.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. So I had never played it either. And I'm not like the hugest Feld fan, but I went home that night and I was like, oh, let me look into this game. You know, I've heard about it a ton. I just never was that excited to try it. So then, classic Candace, I got obsessed. I was watching videos, reading rules, found a copy of it on the geek market, got a copy. I was just, tracking every day. I couldn't wait to play it. I was so happy that it showed up last Saturday so that we could actually play it. And, you know, you had to run off
to... It was
to,
Rosh Hashanah. I had to go to Rosh Hashanah.
So, but we ended up playing a two-player game, and it was fantastic. It exceeded my expectations. I played awfully because it is so hard. So in the game, you have this Mancala kind of rondel, which you're using for your action selection, and you have these different colored pegs in there. And you're trying to synergize the pegs you're picking up and dropping off so that a certain color combination ends up so you could take a bonus action. Meanwhile, there are like six mini games kind of on the board, which are the main actions. They're all like really straightforward, but the way it all kind of like works together is so like it burnt my brain like the best way.
It is a great brain burner. The Mancala mechanism, you have to plan so far ahead.
Oh my goodness.
It's, it's kind of the best example of what a board game can do. Like, I think what I really enjoy at a board game, which is that the act of moving pieces on a Mancala is very simple, but like making sure you have the right colors and the right bowls at the right time to do the things you need requires so much thought, and you're synergizing with all the other things on the board that you're, I think it's actually one of his most brain burnery games because of that was such a simple thing. I wish he actually came out with like a Trajan 2 where it's not like a second edition of Trajan, but just using the Mancala, and maybe be interesting to see how that would be applied to maybe like some newer game concepts that have come out since whenever it was 2011, you know?
It's kind of interesting because Feld is really big on these mini games. You don't see that with a lot of other designers, I feel like.
Yeah.
Well, you're saying Gugong. It comes up every now and then.
Oh, right. Really, I forgot all about Gugong.
Yeah. And I actually really have been thinking about playing Gugong again lately because I bought the expansion like 2-3 years ago and I've never played with the expansion. The expansion's supposed to be wonderful.
Yeah.
But, a lot of people hate the mini games. And
yeah, it's not my favorite thing. That's what I was about to say. And Crystal Palace is another example of a game with a really cool central mechanic where you set all the values of your dice. But then you engage with these minigames that just aren't that interesting to me.
I'd be excited to try it. Yeah, I think that's what originally turned me off to Trajan, why I was just like, oh, whatever, it's just some minigames, you know. But again, it's like each little minigame or, you know, action is, they're all important. You want to do them all, but you can only do certain things based on the way you're trying to drop those Mancala pieces around. And the other thing I really liked with like a two-player game, it was very competitive feeling. And there was like some player interaction at different points. You're competing to race up this Senate track. Mm-hmm. You know, you have the ship situation, you know.
There's so much going on and there's these punishments. It goes very quickly.
The people demand stuff in this game. Yeah.
I'm totally fine with mini games. I feel like there should be justice for mini games. People just don't like them. It's like if you say that a game has mini games, people go, oh, and and I don't think like why is that bad? I mean, so there's so many abstractions in games. Maybe because it just feels like people want things to feel more cohesive or something. But there are plenty of games that have like mini games. I would argue, and this is an on the fly kind of thing, but like there are probably a lot of games that have mini games all over, but they're kind of integrated in a way that it feels like it's part of a cohesive thing. And I think that maybe with Trajan, it's so obvious. And with Gugong, that there's like, you go to this area, you do this thing, and this thing over here that, I don't know, but maybe that just like really chafes people.
Yeah. I feel like it's one level up in design to take all these disparate aspects and make them interact with one another.
Yeah.
And if you can't accomplish that, it feels like your design is a little, to me, it feels like your design is a little bit lacking.
I really want to play Marrakesh, by the way, which is his game. Still haven't played that game that came out last year. And people are saying it's great. Some people are saying it's like a top 2 or 3 Feld game. And like, I think there's a new edition. There's an expansion, but there was like a deluxe version that I'm not gonna buy the deluxe version, but I want to get the non-deluxe version. But I don't know. I have just a little concern about, am I really going to be able to get to the table? Because the Game Brain crew in general, I feel like everyone respects Feld, but I find that a lot of times when I say, hey, let's get a Feld to the table, it's not met with like, yeah, it's sort
of. I'll play with Tim. Our friend Tim loves Feld.
But it sounds like would you guys want to play Marrakesh if I?
I would try it.
I would try it also.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. And I will say also, I ended up downloading the rules to play Trajan solo. There's a little deck of 18 cards and it seems really cool. So I'm going to try it solo at some point because it's definitely a skill-based game. Like I made so many mistakes trying to like, oh, I really need to do this action. Oh crap, I don't have the pieces to drop so that I end up in that action.
Mm-hmm.
The other last thing I'll mention is that at the beginning of the game, you get an end game scoring tile. Mm-hmm. Everybody gets one. I looked at my tile and it has some green resource on it, like one of these green tiles that has a resource. I'm like, for 9 points? I was like, oh, I'll worry about that later.
Yeah.
You know? Not knowing exactly how the game was going to go down and that demand where you have to like take care of the people's needs every round, I ended up missing out of that 9 points. Yep. I got another tile at some point. I missed out of another 9 points.
I feel you.
It was brutal.
Coincidentally, I wound up playing Castles of Burgundy on Thursday with one of my best friends. And I just had one of those games where I was like one short of filling up the big plot of land. And for people who don't know that game, first of all, find a way to play it because it's a classic and everyone should play it. It's a wonderful game.
Even from like a Feld downer like me, I think.
I think it is a great game. I feel like it's not quite as exciting to me as it was 6 or 7 years ago when I first played it. But it's still like, it will always be a very fun time. But I was like one tile short on all these, like filling out a thing, completing all these of a certain color. And I just was like falling short. And like, that's what Feld games are good for too, is that like he puts his, like, what's the expression? Just puts the the things in you, whatever the
stank,
the feels.
You know, there's an expression I know people are going nuts. I apologize to everyone, but he is a punishing. For as much as his games are all about
point salad, yes.
You get a little bit of this for everything. It's also like you get a little bit of this for everything. But by the way, here's something awful that's about to happen to you. And anyone who played Amsterdam recently with me knows that experience. So, by the way, we've been talking a lot recently about Age of Innovation. Mm-hmm. It's been like the hotness.
So good. So good.
It is really good. Jordan, what, like, have you been able to speak your mind? Have you heard recently? Do you feel like there are things that need to be said about this game that are on your mind?
I just want to say briefly, Paul talked about this game a lot last week, and he talked about our play 1v1, which was a really fun game. I just think Age of Innovation is one of the best games you can buy right now. Maybe my top game of the year. Mm. It's so fascinating. There's so much depth of play. And I just want to, you know, completely immerse myself and play that game as much as possible. And I just wanted to, you know, come on and sing my praises for that game. I think it's something really special and everyone should play it. And I want to talk too, because someone was, I was speaking to a friend recently who said, oh, I own Terra Mystica. It's 80% the same. Do I really need both? And my answer is yes, or sell Terra Mystica. Because I think this game really perfects the formula and just adds a lot, both over Gaia Project and Terra Mystica. So it's my personal favorite of the three. And I think we'll be playing it more so than any of the other games that have come out this year in 5 years.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I love Age of Innovation also. And, you know, it was what, the week before Gen Con or so, we played Terra Nova, which is the, you know, the watered down version of Terra Mystica, like the intro version. And I hadn't played any Terra Mystica in years, but I played probably a half dozen times back in like 2019 when I first got into heavy games. So this like retingled my brain of like all things Terra Mystica. And then I got like really hyped for Age of Innovation, got Age of Innovation, played it at Gen Con, like loved it. Like I had a moment where I placed my first two, not dwellings, but the little houses.
Yeah.
Well,
settlements.
Yeah. Settlements, whatever.
Log cabins.
I placed them and I was like, I've lost the game because I was the only person that didn't have neighbors. And I ended up making this crazy comeback because of the different innovation tiles that I got. Mm-hmm. And I was just trying to, like, every round is a new puzzle. And that excites me so much. And yeah. So, but the thing about Age of Innovation is, one of my friends said, she's like, oh yeah, she's like, I still like the tracks in Gaia Project more. And that reminded me that I hadn't like really played Gaia Project. I played a partial game, had a bad teach like back in the day. And so I was like, I'm gonna revisit Gaia Project.
Yeah.
And I started falling in love with Gaia Project. And I've now since played that way more than I played Age of Innovation.
Really?
But I've played Gaia Project
solo, or
I played it solo probably like four or five times.
Wow.
Probably
wow.
Two of those on BGA, and then a couple times in person. I've been like on a mission to teach it to friends. I've discovered I have so many friends who've never played any Terra Mystica games. Wow. So I'm like, I've been teaching them that and Age of Innovation and everything. So I'm like, I love all of the games. Right now, for whatever reason, I think Gaia Project has been most exciting to me, but I want to get back into Age of Innovation.
You know, interesting. Yeah, I got to play more Age of Innovation. I got to play more Gaia Project. I really do. I think I've said this like three podcasts in a row. I just, for some reason, I'm never compelled to play those games, but when I played them, I always have a great time. So I think there's like an intimidation factor for some reason, but I think I just... intimidation factor / I always have this thing hanging over me about like, gotta play more of the games I never play or whatever. But then at this point, Gaia Project is one of those games. So I don't know, but we'll figure it. But by the way, you mentioned talking about like how you had played Gaia Project and it had been like an aborted play. It was a whatever. And you sort of had moved on from it and then you came back to it. So along those lines, another thing I want to circle back to, Jordan and I, we played Sky Mines this week.
Yes.
Which Candace and I played earlier in the summer.
Yeah.
And so, Jordan, going into that Sky Mines game, where was your mindset about the game?
So I'd only played one game of Sky Mines before, and it was a fun play, but it felt like the game didn't properly cohere. It didn't really work to give you a good impression of the game. So I was excited to try it again because I like a lot of Alexander Pfister.
Because the two of us played with Matt Robinson.
That's right.
And had you played Mombasa?
I'd never played Mombasa before. So I'd played one game of Sky Mines, and the previous game I'd played was on the Moon map. We played the belt,
which is what Kansas and I had played with Mike Nikoloff earlier in the summer. Yeah.
It was great. It was a really tense play. All the players were, you know, fighting over the stocks of these companies, fighting over the map. But it was really a learning play. That game is so deep. There's so much there. And I'm really excited to keep plumbing its depths. I mean, the deck building aspect of that game is pretty unique. It feels really fascinating. And, you know, looking over at the, you know, it's one of those games where you can look at everyone's holdings and look at the board and really analyze. And that is, that's an exciting thing.
Yeah, I playing it again, like after I played it with you, Candace, remember I was like, oh my God, like, wait a second.
This is so good.
I have now finally connected with this game.
Yeah.
And then when we played this week, Jordan, I was just like, this game is so good. I feel like we sold it short on this podcast. I mean, I can't, it's not probably not fair because for me to say that because everyone has their opinions. But I know when I was on that review of Sky Mines that we did about a year ago. I remember I was also, I believe I was pretty hungover that day. And for some reason, I was like, I need to be there for this review. Yeah, I did not need to be there because I'd only played Sky Mines like solo. I should not have been on that review. And I remember I really focused. I focused a lot on how it looked or whatever. But like, that was dumb of me to do that because the truth is Sky Mines is so good. Yeah. It was like so deeply good and everything feels exciting and everything was tense and you're looking at all the other players and it is rich and there's so many things to try and the variability is like through the roof with how those tracks lay out and where they lay out and what they do. One thing that like I couldn't figure out is did the game come alive also because we were playing the belt board or is it like, I want to try it again now on the Moon, which is like the classic Mombasa map, and see how it differs.
Yeah, it has always come alive for me. Like, well, when I originally played Mombasa, I was excited just by reading the rules. Like, I was like, oh my goodness, I love this game. I love this game. Then when I taught it the first time, I was so excited to share it with people, and they were like, oh, as I'm teaching, they were like, that sounds cool. I'm like, yeah. And then we played it, and it just, every single time I play it, it's so good.
Yeah, I feel like it's so, so good, and I feel like it's sort of just not being part, it's just not getting thrown into the conversation as much as it really should be, right? Is that maybe because it's an older game just revamped?
Yeah, and I think people really bounced off the art, which we talked about. Yeah.
That's not great.
People do not love the art in that game, and that's kind of tough. But I have a sort of question. I mean, I'm excited to keep playing the game, but I'm wondering how variable the gameplay is going to be, and if the way to win the game is always going to be hit the top of one of the two tracks on your player board, hit the top of one of the faction tracks, max that faction out. I mean, is it really going to boil down to that every game, or are there going to be different ways to achieve victory? So I'm wondering.
Well, I mean, the game has been out for what, like since 2015,
right?
So I kind of feel like if there was a feeling of like, oh, you just do this, that maybe that would be something that is like in the forums pretty heavily.
I didn't look. Right. And I guess what I mean, though, is not, oh, you're going to do the exact same actions to achieve the exact same result. I'm just wondering if at the end of the game state is going to look the same every game or if there's going to be a different looking setup.
Yeah, there are also those modules, too. Like, I don't know if you guys have looked into like playing with any of those little modules that you can add to it to kind of vary it up a bit.
Yeah, we almost did some of the missions, but it was a little bit too much on the fly. It's okay, Jordan. Jordan just slurped with the straw. It's okay, Jordan.
Thanks for calling me out. Appreciate it.
No, like
it was a mystery sound. Nobody knew.
It was me. I'll fall on the sword.
Oh, thank you so much.
Just I'm falling on the sword and I'm blaming it on Jordan, guys.
It was actually Ben. It was Ben.
But what were we saying? Oh, the missions. I was gonna add them on the fly, but they were actually the process more involved and next time I do want to play with them. But I mean, in terms of like, is it going to be the same game state? I mean, basically the main areas where you get the points in the game are on the stock tracks and on like the helium track and the research track. And I think I think those are like our places that you earn points.
Yeah, absolutely.
So like I don't think you can win by doing research and helium. I think that's really hard to win. Maybe you could. But I think you're either going to be either high on two tracks or high on a track and one of the side tracks. And so you probably are right, but I don't know if that's I don't think that's a negative. I think it's just.
Yeah, no, it's just right after a conversation about Age of Innovation when you could find a winning strategy by comboing three different pieces to build a winning strategy. And every time you play, it's going to feel very various.
Yes.
It, you know, this game maybe pales in terms of variety.
Well, maybe I think the variety in this case maybe comes just from the players.
Yeah.
Like player variety, you know, dynamic, whatever. And speaking of Pfister and speaking of multiple strategies and speaking of variety, I want to weigh in on a gameplay of Great Western Trail New Zealand I had last night, where this is sort of like the Pfister Fiesta, but it's also like catching up on stuff that we keep up. But I had my second play of Great Western Trail New Zealand. I'm really loving it. And that's a game that has a lot of different pads. And so I played last night and I decided to try some different things or different approaches because you sort of do a lot of different things. But one thing that I did is in Great Western Trail, New Zealand, there is a track, a kind of uninspiring track in some ways compared to the more exciting looking things you could do. But was it the discovery track or exploration
track?
Something like that. It's like a bird
track.
The bird track.
Yeah.
And you basically just like trudge up it and you unlock things.
Cool stuff.
But so in my mindset, when we started playing, when we were done getting the teach, it was like 10:15 p.m. And I knew we were podcasting this morning. Yeah.
Wow.
It's a long late teach. Game. It was a long teach.
Was it a long game of Avalon ahead of it? Or?
Yeah, we finished Avalon. We did two games of Avalon because it was pretty quick. And it was not a triumph. But although I guess it doesn't matter. But then we started teaching around, like setting up, teaching 9:15. It just took a while to sort of, there's a lot in the game.
Yeah, if you've never played Great Western Trail.
Exactly. And so in my mind, I was like, we're starting late. There's probably going to be some AP at this table tonight. And so I basically was like, I am going to do the fast game. I'm going to try to go as quick. I'm going to try to actually rush this game.
Yeah.
So I want to unlock speed. And I want to do all these things. So if I'm going to unlock speed, you have to go. One thing that you really have to do is go up the exploration track. Mm-hmm. So then I was like, okay, I'm going to emphasize the exploration track, which meant that like my first auxiliary actions I unlocked in the game was going up the bird track.
That's cool. Like the very first disc you put out onto the bird track.
Yeah, it was bird track. Wow. And most people first disc is more money or more card, you know, shuffling. But I was like, I'm doing bird track first.
I did bird track for the game we played too.
Really?
Oh, really?
Yeah. Remember? Yeah, that was.
Oh, you went up it a bunch. But was that your first disc you put out too?
I think so. Wow. Yeah. I was all about that.
It was interesting because I thought like my plan is simple. Just always have money and always like hit that double auxiliary, always do everything bird, bird. But what's funny about the game is a lot of times best laid plans go awry. And like next thing you know, I'm not necessarily doing the bird thing. I definitely went hard with bird. And then I wound up sort of teetering into some sailing. And then because of the sailing, I picked up a thing that got me points for having lots of employees. So then I cared a lot about hiring and birding and sailing. And long story short, I did not go to the sheep market once. I never bought a sheep. I only got sheep as bonus, random bonuses around, but I never, ever, ever used that. I never got a shepherd. I never went there, which felt crazy.
Wow.
And came in second place I lost by 4 points.
Wow.
Which I thought was so cool. Yeah. To me, that was awesome. If my strategy had been just slightly more focused, I probably could have pulled out the win. I lost the person who David Gillison ended the game. So that little 5 point marker you get by triggering the end.
Oh yeah, that was enough.
Well,
you had one more turn.
I was actually one. I was one spot short of being able to do a final delivery. And if I've been able to do the final delivery, but my speed came one spot short.
So, bummer.
I love New Zealand. I think New Zealand is wonderful. I've been hearing some other reviews online that are like, it's good, but it's convoluted or this or that. I'm like, no, it's excellent. I think it's so fun. And I love that I could do a whole different game with doing counterintuitive things and still be competitive.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I was very excited about it.
Lots of various strategies there.
I'm just surprised. Like, I've only played New Zealand once so far, okay. And I'm a huge Great Western Trail fan. And so it's just crazy to me how much I've been in love with, like, the Terra Mystica games, because, like, I've been more excited to play, like, Age of Innovation or Gaia Project, mm-hmm. which I never thought I would, you know, that would happen.
Interesting, yeah.
But I still, like, love it. It's still, like, one of my favorite games. I've just been, like, what I'm on this Age of Innovation Gaia kick right now, you know?
And there's totally nothing fair. Wrong with that. And for me, Great Western Trail, I think I realized last night when I was doing, before I saw how everything was going to pan out, I was like, I'm clearly going to be probably back of the pack because this is wild. I'm not getting any cattle. David Gillison was getting, not cattle, sheep. He was like sheep after sheep after sheep, putting down tokens everywhere. He was basically playing base game Great Western Trail. And I was like, I know my strategy is unfocused. I know I'm doing weird things, but I was like, I don't even care, because one thing with Great Western Trail is that I find that almost anything I do in that game, any action I take, I always have fun with it. I always feel good about it. I'm always like, well, it's an auxiliary action, but I really needed those two coins. You know, I don't know. Like, I just have, so it hits my pleasure zone so much, which is why it's probably appealing to me more than Age of Innovation. But Age of Innovation, I really enjoy too, which I play with Jordan.
Yes.
And, like, they're kind of similar in some respects, because the deck building changes in New Zealand, you know, is almost like it's adding so much different variety and changing up each game in a similar way that Age of Innovation changes up Terra Mystica every single game, you know?
And how Sky Mines changes up Mombasa, flipping the map over. Yeah. All of these games we've been talking about.
Yeah. You know what system of games always has interesting, like, variations and, like, revamps and, like, a new way to approach something classic? 18XX. So I'm really excited. I forgot to mention this last week, but nice segue. Really, yeah, that's what we call a segue, guys. We have to talk about Voidfall, so we are going here.
We're powering through.
No, but I'm really excited to talk about this. So for the first time ever, I'm like an official playtester on a game. Although I've done playtests game of games that have come out, and like friends games. This is the first time I'm in an official playtest program where I am, like, filling out forms after plays and, you know, things like that.
It's exciting.
And I was like, can I talk about this? He's like, yes. So I am playtesting 18 EUS, Eastern United States, which is going to be coming out on GMT. Not on GMT. That's sounds like a cable network. From GMT. And so it hit the P 500, right? And it's been very exciting for me to, like, be part of this whole process and everything. So let me tell you a little bit about the game. Okay, so it's designed by Greg Holton. I don't know when it's coming out, but, like, it's listed on BGG as 2021, which is probably when his sort of prototype or basic version was hitting the various conventions and stuff. But what's really cool about this game is the central concept is essentially that you can have player loans. And there have been 18XX games where there are company loans. Like, if your train company gets in trouble and you need to buy a train, you can get loans. Like, 1817 has that. So some other ones that have it. But this one is actual player loans. So if you are in the stock round and you want to buy more stock, you can just take out a loan. And then you can buy more stocks, maybe start a company that way, maybe invest in a company, but it's on you as the investor. This is not a company loan. But as you take out loans, by the way, 1848 Australia has loans. Remember those?
Yes. Yep. Oh, yeah.
But those are company loans. But, when you take out the loans, you do have to pay interest. You pay personal interest to the bank. And another thing you can do is you can also buy shares in the bank. And not if you have loans, though. So basically, if Jordan, you take out like three loans, then I might take out some bank shares because I know the bank shares are going to pay out more since you have more loans. Oh my God, the Amazon guy is just walking right by this random window. Right now. Sorry, it's just very distracting. So the more loans you have, the more payouts people who have bank shares have. So everyone around the table is acting dynamically based on everyone else's behavior. People can capitalize off of your debt. But then if you settle your debt, then you are actually counter-striking the people who have bank shares because they become less valuable. And it's such a cool system. And I've been having so much fun. And so, you know, yesterday I was playing it. I did like a four-person, it was an international like game. I was in LA. We had someone up in like Seattle, someone in London, someone in Amsterdam, and we're on there, we're playing it, and it was just, it was great. I am so excited for you guys to play this game. Everyone should really like have this one on their radars because it's doing some different things than other 18XX games, and obviously it's going to have some tweaks, but it'll be great.
Is it like, what's the playtime on this one?
Well, you know what? Yesterday we started at noon and we were done at like 4 o'clock.
Oh, wow.
Ah.
That was online though. That's online playing, but it moved briskly.
Okay.
But there's a lot of, I felt like it actually really engendered a lot of fun table talk because it's like, are you going to go into debt? I mean, you're going to debt. I don't want to go into debt, you know, and like there's sure. a lot of that kind sure. of conversation going on. So
how significant is that debt mechanic? Like if you have one bank share and someone takes out one loan, how much are you going to get paid off of that?
Well, I think it's one of the people at the table yesterday, Greg, the designer, poked in on our Discord discussion. And so I don't know if he said or someone else said it, but someone said that like there was a whole table of debt. Like everyone was taking out loans, which is another dynamic thing, which is like, well, everyone's taking out a loan, so no one's going for the bank share, so I might as well go into debt too. Like if we all go into debt, we're all going to be okay.
Sure.
But one person had like one bank share and that bank share did so well. And it like, because it appreciates so much and then your loans also appreciate. So they can really work against you by the end of the game. So apparently that person with that one bank share won because of that bank share.
Wow.
And one of the players yesterday had like a single bank share for a while and it was like giving them money. It's fascinatingly balanced and they're still tweaking it because it's in playtesting, but
sounds cool.
Sounds really cool. Yeah.
We're gonna have to play that when it comes in. Yeah. Okay. So everyone just put that on your radars. That was my like 18XX report. I'm just like very, very excited about it. And, you know, I'm always going to try to push 18XX wherever I can. But, you know, that was my thing. By the way, Candace, I have a question. This has nothing to do with it, but I was just looking through the list of games that we played recently. What did you think about Magnate the First City, by the way?
Oh, I liked it a lot. You know, it was something where I it took me a little bit to wrap my head around it, but I definitely like I wanted to keep playing it. You know, or I wanted to keep playing it. No, our game went kind of long.
Yeah.
I wanted to play it again because everything kind of clicked as it progressed. And also, I love how the board develops. And I don't know. I think I might agree with you that it's like one of the more enjoyable city building games for me. And I know you mentioned Matt is interested in playing it, which that's always a good sell. My Matt. Yeah, not Matt Robinson. But yeah, my Matt is interested in playing it. And anytime he even gets remotely excited about playing a game, it's like, let's play it.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed it quite a bit. And I also, you know, was playing with you and Simon and it was just such a chill day. And yeah, and I want to play it again.
I was so happy you enjoyed it. Yeah. I really was.
Yeah. I'm glad we played it.
It was just fun. It's just a fun game, right? Okay. I'm just glad. I just want to check
in. No, I enjoyed it quite a bit.
Is it time to talk about Voidfall?
Let's do it.
Okay, Jordan.
I think so.
Jordan, tell us about Voidfall.
Sure.
Well, first, maybe tell of our situation of just getting, you know, me getting it yesterday.
Candace got delivery of her copy yesterday. We've played it. Candace and I have played it twice in the last 24 hours. Once last night, we started a game around 8 and finished around 1 with 4 players. So it was a 5-hour game. And then once this morning, the 3 of us played. And that was like a 3-hour game, which is pretty good.
We got it in 3 hours.
So
it's the latest game from Mind Clash, publishers of Tricarion, Anachrony, Cerebria, etc. Designed by David Turksey and Nigel Buckle.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, I just want to say, this is not a review. This is just like first impressions. Very initial impressions. It's not responsible to do a review on this. It's just like you play it. Like
we're
this
excited
is the plays.
About it.
Like you know what do you think?
Absolutely.
Like,
and I know Matt Robinson has a lot of thoughts on this game too.
Yeah,
he's
I feel like
excited
when
to review
when there's
it.
An official review, I feel like that Matt is on that. It shouldn't be me.
Right. Well, I mean,
maybe it will be. Maybe it'll be me.
I think it'll be you, Ben. I'm just messing around.
It's gonna be
me. Nice.
copyright infringement.
So it's a themed as a 4X game like Eclipse. And at the beginning of the game, you'll have two sort of space sectors that you control, and as will every player. And then the rest of the map will be covered by these NPC Voidborns who occupy these hexes and who you have to fight to take over additional space.
Voidborns, just for everyone to know, Voidborns are like bad guys. I just want to say, because like you said, Voidborns as if like that's like a...
Like, NPC enemies. I think they tried to get away from the colonization theming by saying this was our galaxy. They came in and took it over and we're just trying to take it back.
Yes.
You know? Anyway,
the galaxy.
So the game plays over three cycles. Each cycle you'll take 4 to 6 turns approximately, and you'll play one of 9 cards that each have 3 actions on them and use 2 of them. So there's a lot of choices in the game, and you'll be managing A, those cards, B, your sectors and your ships, C, your technologies, right? And all of your resources and all these things. So that's a very bad explanation.
But. And agendas.
You'll be doing things, taking turns.
And, right. All in the pursuit of scoring points. And the way you do that is through these agenda cards.
No, in the pursuit of being the savior of the galaxy.
That's right. That's right.
That is more important than points.
Right. But the way you get to do that, it's determined by points. That's right. So that's sort of the general structure of the game. Well, I don't know. Why don't you two weigh in with some initial thoughts? I don't know if you guys have anything you want to...
Yeah, I would just say first, it's not really 4X. It's more of a 3X. You're not really exploring. So you're kind of missing that. And it's very... it's a Euro, you know.
It's definitely
like a Euro experience. It feels very Euro-y. The combat is deterministic, so there are no dice rolling in this game.
The combat, like I said, felt very much like the combat of Western Empires, where in Western Empires you have like a stack of chits going up against another stack of chits, and then you sort of like peel them off of each pile until there's only one pile left, and that's the winner. So more or less, sorry if I oversimplified that, but I'm not saying that as a negative. I'm saying like roots, you can see roots of other games in this.
So I'll chime in just because yesterday it was my first game playing it. I think just before it went on Kickstarter, David Turtsy gave me like a maybe one round demo of it in TTS. And I remember being excited about it then, but then I kind of like forgot about it because there are all these games coming out. You know, it takes a while to produce these big games like this. But I know like Jordan, like you and Matt Robinson have been super excited about it. You guys dabbled in playing it in TTS a bit. Mm-hmm, so yesterday when I played it for the first time, I was like, wait, how does this game work? Like, I just remembered there being a ton of icons. And I remembered after David explain them to me, I'm like, oh, you know, it's Ian O'Toole did the art and a graphic design. So it's like there are a million icons, but once you learn them, it's like it's so well
they're
done.
They're very learnable. Okay. Yeah. Because I want to say as a callback to the Feld stuff, I've got Amsterdam and I've got Hamburg, but I've got the English cards. But Amsterdam has the version I have. Ooh, there's someone at my door.
It's probably the Amazon guy's been circling.
It's probably Amazon delivery person, but that's okay.
I can keep going. My thoughts on
yeah,
it.
Yeah, sure, go for it, guys.
But yeah, so anyway, the production of it is amazing. It's very like the first time you see everything, and if you're learning it, like thankfully Jordan learned all the rules and was able to teach. So it kind of took the burden off of me. But I think, you know, if you're the one that's learning and teaching this, it's going to be a beast. And you should just kind of like expect that first game is going to be very much a learning game. You know, take it with a grain of salt. Because me coming back this morning and playing it a second time, everything clicked so much easier for me. You know, just having had that one play yesterday, but it's very over, you know, like intimidating initially.
What I was going to say before the Amazon delivery was that, yes, there is a lot of iconography, but Jordan taught it to me. Jordan, I want to encourage Jordan to do a tutorial, a video tutorial of this game, because he did an excellent job teaching, like really above and beyond. Like, and let me tell you something. Jordan also taught me Lisboa early this year, and he did a great job with that too. So, like, you have a real knack for these Thank really you. Heavy games but of iconography.
The only problem with his teach is that I didn't win either game.
He forgot That's to tell me true. How to win.
I did not explain how to win.
But
turns out it's the points.
What I was going to say before is that, so I have Amsterdam, and my version of Amsterdam does not have like cards in English. It just has icons. And those icons are like 20 times less intuitive than these. These, at first you see a bunch of icons, but you learn them very, very easily. Like they really like... It's honestly, I think it was actually easier to learn these icons than actually a lot of the Great Western Trail icons, I would even argue. So even though there was a lot of iconography, it was not killer.
Right. You're never struggling on your turn to parse what an icon means.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Your turns are really focused on what do I need to do to meet this goal? How am I going to sequence these five actions I need to take?
Yeah.
You know, I need to take five actions. There's two different ones I could do for this one. They're on two different cards. There's another one that's, I must play this card at some point. When am I going to do that? How am I going to max this out?
Yeah.
I think like I was, and then what I really appreciated was that when I first sat down and I saw everything on this map and I saw these icons, I was bracing for one of these games that's like, you can do this many things, but only if you have this. And if there's a spaceship in there, then you have to add this to this. And otherwise, or you can't build, you know, more fleets unless there's this here or that. I thought it would be one of these things with all these rules of exceptions that are trying to, I thought a lot of times, I've said this before, there are a lot of games that I feel like try so hard to generate an experience, especially one that almost mimics a video game, that there are a lot of like hinky rules to make sure you stay in that vibe. And that actually takes me completely out of it. And I was so delighted that I didn't find literally any of that in this game. There's maybe some confusion about little things like some of the space docks that we had a few little questions about, but honestly, very clear, very clean, very clean game.
The interaction between two techs.
And some of the questions come from the fact that this game comes with this huge scenario book. So each scenario is a little different, and then everybody has like an asymmetric faction, which is really cool.
There's a ton of variety.
Yeah.
There's what, 10 scenarios for each player count for competitive, plus a separate set of solo scenarios, plus a separate set of co-op scenarios for each player count. And then within a scenario, there will be four houses you can play as, and they play completely differently. I was actually, you know, a little blown away by the variability in this game. There's so much to explore. Mm-hmm. And the houses feel really different. As different, if not more different, than the different houses in TI.
But you know what I think this game would benefit from? So it has, like, really excellent components. Like, just perfect, like, in terms of, like, the components look really good, but also like in terms of functionality, little things that you can put cubes in, little things that you can put triangles in,
and just mention that is the Galactic Edition. Apparently, not every version.
Well, the Galactic Edition is the one to get, apparently, because that was really like, no, because honestly, a game like that, like, it can get messy and crazy, things can get all over the place, and it felt very like organized as I played it, which I really appreciated, but. You did mention, like, you know, you have these cards and there's three actions on the card. You choose two of them, but there's sort of like a lot of overlap on different cards. And sometimes you can do one action on this type of card, but you can usually find a similar version of it on this type of card. And I actually think, because there are all these cards, I actually would have really enjoyed a card holder for this game where I could just look at all the cards. I can see what icons are still available to me, because a lot of times I would be sequencing and then I forget, oh, there's this card at the back of my little stack of cards that has an option for me.
I have some card trays like that, and that's a good idea to probably play with them. I think that's again another thing I really like about this game is
those
focus action cards and like all the decisions you have for, you know, what you want to play. And I think sometimes, like, when I'm going into a round, I'm thinking about, like, okay, what do I want to do? Do I want to try to, like, take over, you know, fight those Voidborns over there and take over that planet? Mm-hmm. If so, what do I need to do that? Okay, I'm going to need to reinforce. I'm going to need to get some more ships. Oh, I don't have the resources to do that. Okay, so first I need to do production. Uh-huh. And your production of your resources, you have this like quadruple dial situation.
Quintuple.
They're five. Yeah.
There's actually 10. If you
that dial situation, there's a learning curve with that dial.
Yeah, there is a learning curve with the
numbers. And a lot of times you look at the wrong numbers and do the wrong thing with the wrong numbers, or at least that's what my experience was.
Yeah.
But I still really appreciated the dials, but I definitely, use them incorrectly despite knowing better.
And that's another thing, like, today, coming back today, I had the same problem as you yesterday, Ben. Like, mm-hmm. I was like, it didn't quite click for me initially. But today I'm like, oh, yeah, it's just the resource dials. Yep, this is your production. This is what you're yielding, and this is how much you have.
Yeah.
You know?
This, like, is your stockpile. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So it's like one of those things that, like, clicks after you play it once.
Yeah. I think it might be useful to talk for a second about that exact feeling you're describing on your turn, where you have your hand of nine cards, and your goal for this round is to take over one additional sector. And if you have two or three invasion actions across those cards, right? So what you have to think is, okay, which of these do I actually want to play for the invasion? Maybe they'll be slightly different. They'll come with different bonuses, but they'll also have two other actions on those cards. You have to be like, okay, I want this one, you know, so I can play it along with this action. Okay, how do I set that up by making sure I can get the most of both of those actions, mm-hmm. you know, leading up to it? And, you know, so there's a really interesting sequencing aspect around it. And I want to add that a lot of the times the cards are limited in a way that's very sensible. Like, for instance, you generally cannot use a card to move troops within your mm-hmm. zone of control and then invade.
Unless you're me. I was able to do that.
Yeah,
so maybe your faction had a special ability to do that. Right. You had surprise attacks.
I had quote unquote surprise attacks, which is just basically like, okay, you're allowed to move things and then attack. Because I took the faction that was... I took the simple faction because I was like, I'm new to this.
Yeah. So
I
had the
low complexity faction, which just let me sort of move around. Not that it helped me in any sort of way, because one thing I think that like in all these games, in all these Twilight Imperium, Forbidden Stars, Eclipse, whatever, like you're usually given something that says use this to score points. Mm-hmm. Even Terra Mystica or Gaia Project that says this is where you get your points. Go for it. And this game sort of has like a bit, it says at the beginning of the round, this is where you'll get points at the end of the round. And also you have your agendas. And I think that for me, I did not fully appreciate how important it is just to follow like what it tells you to do. Like I was like, oh, in my mind, I was thinking my power is I've got the surprise attack thing. So I should use that to attack sectors and get points that way because that I'm going to flog my power. And it didn't feel in this initial game that actually, while that was nice and was fun and I got to do that, it didn't feel like that was actually what was in retrospect I probably should have been doing. I feel like I should have been following the what it was telling me to do for points, because I feel like you guys did that and you guys
again
did really
that's
well.
It's a new player that's yeah, like an that's experience thing, because today I did way better with the agendas. And you know, it's important to find the right agendas and get them as early as possible and figure out how to really optimize the scoring on them, because they're huge, which...
The agendas, just so people know, are like you get these cards that say at the end of the round, if you have like you get points for each one of these types of resources you have, maybe something like that.
Personal scoring right. like objectives,
personal
sort
scoring
of.
Objectives.
And you'll score them every round. They don't go away at the end of the round. And a lot of the time they have these sort of levels where once you hit it, you're going to score those points no matter what. Mm-hmm. So if you get that down in round one and you can score it in round one, you'll score it again in round two and three. And so they really escalate the earlier you can get them out.
Yeah. And I think the reason why I think it's interesting, because when I, you know, for me, my two favorite games in this sort of genre of games is obviously Forbidden Stars is my all time favorite in this mm-hmm. kind of world. And then TI4. And in both those games, it's really cut and dry with what you have to do. Like Forbidden Stars, you have to get your objectives. Doesn't matter how you do it, but however you want to do it, you have to get. When I say objectives, like you have to, it's capture the flag.
Yeah.
And you have to get your flags. And in TI4 or any of the TIs, it says like, this is how you get a point.
Yeah.
And this is how you get a point. If you don't get those points, you can't win. You need those points. But this game, it's sort of like
pick your own scoring conditions.
Pick your scoring.
To a certain extent. Yeah. Which is really cool.
It's cool, but you have to, I think you have to really
focus on that.
Appreciate that.
Yes.
Sure. Plus, it's interesting too, because the different factions in TI, it feels like score their points. You know, if you're playing the Saar ball or whatever, you're trying to do the same thing every time, right? You're going to move around and score points in this way by taking over territories. Whereas in this game, as you said, with your surprise attack cards, it lets you do something different, but you still have to find a way to turn that different thing into points.
Yeah.
And that
like getting the right agendas adds, and synergizing. Right. Yeah.
And that adds more else. Variety, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, it's awesome. And I will say too, yesterday, like Jordan was asking, you know, we're like a couple turns in. He's like, do you guys like it? What do you think? What do you think?
That's classic Jordan. And Jordan likes to do a check-in. He likes to do a 20-minute check-in.
20 minutes to make sure.
You guys enjoying this okay?
No, I get
when
that.
When I teach, I feel like I'm responsible.
I think it's very cute. Because I always feel like it's like a, you're like, oh, I hope I didn't drag people into this experience. I was like, it's okay. It's okay.
But I didn't know. Like, I was like, this is interesting, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure. And after playing it today at three players and, you know, grokking the rules a little bit better, I enjoyed it a lot more, and I'm starting to kind of like it more. That being said, a couple of my initial impression, I guess, negative hits on it are, number one, the setup is really long, and this game is a table hog. Like, I can fit 6 players playing TI4 at my table, and we were kind of like struggling to get a 4-player board because your player boards are massive, and the hexes for this game where you're setting up your map are beautiful and huge. And on the galactic version, they're like dual layered and everything, and it's
triple layered.
Triple layered, yeah. it's amazing, but it takes up a lot of space. So that's one thing to note. Like, it's gonna take some time.
It's big.
You
the
know,
setup is egregious. Yeah.
To set it up huge. And to tear it down and everything.
It'll be fast. Like, today was faster than yesterday because today
it's two of us
were doing it, and yesterday was just
yesterday was like 4 of us doing it, but we were all like unboxing it at the same time.
And like you know, familiar. I was thinking about that when we're setting it up, and like I'm not comparing this necessarily to TI4 because they're two different games.
Yeah.
It's not fair. But one thing one experience I really enjoy in TI4, I'm like, I'm not comparing it, but let me compare it. But one experience I do enjoy that the creation of the map in TI4 is something that the group does together, and that it's actually a pretty straightforward thing. It actually takes probably as long as setting this up, but it's done. It's a social experience, and you're putting down tiles. And I think that's like a very, very fun thing. And I kind of wish that there was some element of that in this game in terms of making that map.
Yeah. Just to add on to that, though, the maps in this are perfectly balanced. Like, they're symmetrical.
Yeah. And by the way, Forbidden Stars does that
for,
too.
For like the event cards that you might encounter.
And they're related to the event cards
and
the faction. So it's all balanced together and thought about. But the other thing I'd say is this game is meant to be sort of in
Euro,
a certain way,
Euro,
but also TI light, like way shorter. Mm-hmm. Our game today was 3 players.
It was
3 hours.
Yeah.
And, you know, TI is...
if you play TI at 3 players...
It would still take at least twice as long as this.
No, I played TI at 3 players before, oddly enough, and it was probably about 4 or 5 hours. So, yeah, okay. Yeah.
So, I wouldn't really put this in the same umbrella as TI,
no.
Aside from the space theme, but, like, I was hearing a lot of people compare it to Scythe, actually. Like, saying it was, like, kind of a souped-up Scythe.
That's one of my concerns. So I want to talk about that a little bit later. But you have a concern about a runaway winner.
I have a couple of concerns here. And I have a caveat. I'm just going to say this could all be like new player
this
stuff.
This is not the review. This
exactly.
is just like
we so
played
this
it. This is what we're thinking.
This is
my,
me playing this game twice now in the past 24 hours. So one thing, Jordan just said it. I think there could be a runaway leader problem because we were talking about, you know, these cool agenda cards where you can kind of create how you're going to score throughout the game. But if one player, and this seems to have happened both times we played, like if one player is like doing well and figures that out, it's hard to then come back and catch up.
Yeah.
And it might be like you said, like, hey, maybe somebody needs to attack someone.
Yeah.
And that could be a new player thing where we're all like turtling a little bit and just kind of like in our own worlds. But between that and also when you do fight and, you know, if you fight the NPC, the Voidborns, you are going to score these glory tokens over and over again. The last game we just played, Jordan had like 12 points or 15 points worth of glory tokens.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I'm like,
12,
if you keep
I mean,
if
a,
you keep taking over.
Too.
Yeah, but like if you keep doing that, you're getting like 15,
but,
10
but
points.
But if someone attacks you, they score
they
your
you
glory.
Yeah.
But here's
right?
the thing, though. Yeah. At the end of the 3 rounds, and at the end of the second round, I had like 75 points. Jordan was at like 140. If I attack Jordan, okay, I'm gonna get 12 points. And he loses 3 points.
Yeah.
Okay, great. You're still 70 points ahead of me.
So I hear that, and I have the same concern that you
do. I'm actually not even complaining. I'm just saying, like...
It's an observation.
Maybe you have to be checking right from the beginning, or the game doesn't feel almost long enough to then drag someone down.
So that's sort of what I'm wondering about, because at the end of each of the games I've played, and I've played 4 now, we've come to this place where everyone's next to each other. Anyone could basically attack anyone, right? And in all 4 of those games, nobody decided to do that. And in a game of Scythe, that's probably a similar, you know, state of affairs. No one's really going to attack each other, or if you do, it's going to be very limited. And then for this game to really work, I think you need a higher level of player interaction, and you need to be able to check someone and add that player versus player combat in. Now, it might be, one, like you're saying, Ben, it's not enough, right? You can't drag someone down enough and prop yourself back up enough by engaging in player combat. If that's the case, that's a serious problem. It might also be players in our games have been unwilling to attack each other because this feels like a Euro and it's so long. And so you don't want to come in at the end and say, hey, let me just knock you down.
Right. But it's so long, but and at the same time, paradoxically, not long enough, because there's almost like not enough time. If there's 3 cycles and at the end of the second cycle, someone has big points, there's not enough time to maybe... and first impression, that this is just hot take and what it seems like. Mm-hmm. There's not enough time to then say, like, let's pull the rug out of that person and hoist ourselves up. And so it's I don't know what you necessarily do with that. I don't know if that's just comes down to experience of, again, also you had 140 points. I had 70 points. It was like after the second round, but my first time playing the game. So right. I'm not flogging the things I need to flog. I'm just like going around with my little spaceships attacking aliens. And the other thing is the game does have, there's a million aliens over the board, so you're actually so involved with these aliens that you aren't really incentivized to go after someone instinctively. Maybe right. You should be, but so, like, you're not.
Yeah.
So just to chime in real quick, because one of the things that I think is very cool about the game is that when you're sitting down to set up and picking which scenario, you have a choice of the aggression level and the complexity level that you want to play. But I think I'm still wondering if it is a new player thing, or if you're, like you're saying, we're playing this Euro game, so we're not really wanting to attack each other, or, you know, again, who knows if it'll even help all that much unless you do it early. And then what are you leaving behind when you're doing that?
There's
like lots of,
I felt like, there was a lot of stuff I really liked about this game. Like, I felt like the card play was really fun, the choices, and I loved how clean it was. I had the sequencing, I really had a fun time, but I was surprised that, like, as the game went on, for some reason I was having less of a fun time.
Interesting.
And it was, I don't know why. I found that, the first round I was having a great time. I didn't have a bad time. I had a good time the entire way through. Mm-hmm. So this is not like, it's not a negative. It's just something I flagged. I noticed that, like, when a new round would begin, I don't know, maybe there was something about the objectives or
was it the scoring? Like the fact that scoring. You felt like you were like really behind.
I wasn't upset. I wasn't feeling like, oh, I'm out of the game. I was just sort of like, I felt like almost like I didn't know what to do. I was like, I guess I'll go after more aliens and I'll try to go for that thing. I you know what it is? It's almost, it felt like for me, some of those scoring things that you get fresh at the beginning of the new round, it like did not contribute to almost like a narrative experience. I wonder if that's it. Like, I didn't feel like the stakes of the game were raising every time. It was like, now I have to focus on this. And so I was just sort of like, okay, I'm going to do, I have to put some more things on the board and I'll try to get 2 points for each of those things. Mm-hmm. I can't pinpoint it, but I just know that it didn't feel like an escalation every round to me. It just felt like, okay, now I've got to do something else this round. And maybe that took away some of the excitement.
Interesting.
Did that make sense? Am I a crazy person right now? I shouldn't say crazy, but am I like...
I know what you mean.
Do you think I have to like... rein it in? Is this like too hot of a take?
I'm not sure. I do feel some of the escalation because as the game goes on, you're managing more. And also some of the more interesting hexes, both controlled by the Voidborn and controlled by other players, become more and more accessible to you as you expand. So you're getting in contact with more interesting places to move, more interesting things to fight. And at the end of every, you know, subsequent round, you'll probably have more agendas, more scoring opportunities.
Yeah.
So the escalation is there for me, but I understand
what I didn't you're feel escalate. I guess that, you know what it is? I just didn't feel the stakes of the game were raising. I think that's what it was. And so I enjoyed it, but I didn't, I felt like I was like, oh, it just felt like another round. And so like I even took over the central the Mechatol Rex of our scenario.
It was like cool.
Okay.
Cool.
Like, well, it didn't do anything. It was like, it was, yeah, I got
maybe 12 money production, right? I mean,
which I didn't,
which you did nothing.
Yeah. And like, yeah. it was like, okay.
That's
cool, I guess. It didn't feel like I hate to do this. Yeah, I hate to do this, but with both TI4, with Eclipse, with Forbidden Stars, like if someone gets their objective, then there's like an urgency that picks up for the rest of the players. Like, gotta do something about this.
Which
maybe there's no urgency.
So
or maybe you're not thinking about that it is urgent, that you need to come in and mess something up.
I'm 100% open to that because it's a new player thing.
So that actually, yeah, that leads to another one of my comments is that, and this is could be completely a new player thing, but I noticed it both days here, is that nobody is paying attention to what other people are doing on their turns.
I had no idea what you were doing, Candace, your side of the board.
And on top of that, and like, I don't know how many times you would need to play this before you would start paying attention. Like, oh, Jordan has that agenda. Can I even see it across the board? And like, let me try to do something to prevent. I don't know if that's possible or anything, but one of my big challenges, and I don't know if anybody else has had this yet, is downtime. So especially in the 4-player game, I had so many moments, almost like 65% of my turns, where I knew exactly which card I wanted to play after I play a card. And even if Ben, you know, is going next and knows what he's doing, it takes a long time to kind of go through your actions. I know that'll like speed up a little bit as you get better, but I don't know, because there's a lot of things happening.
And there's not a lot. There are a lot of games where that happens. There's downtime, and you just sort of sit there and you think about it. And you know, oh, I forgot to talk about this, but you know, the three of us played Here I Stand.
Yeah,
and we were gonna talk about that because I'm sorry everyone, because we all played.
If we have time,
I wanted to bring your perspectives in it too, because I was speaking my take for it. But one thing I did mention last week was that I sat there for an hour. And like that was sort of a bummer for me to sit there for an hour. But like even in Here I Stand, there were still something. I still like there were cards. I did look at a certain point. You can only look at things in your hand for so long. But I was able to take a good 20-25 minutes to look through my cards and spend that time. And I find that like 18xx games can have a lot of downtime, but I'm studying the map. I'm thinking of things I could do, thinking about how I could work with my money. TI4, I'm going through my technologies, and I didn't feel like with the downtime here I had too much to do. I could look at my cards, but
I just wasn't caring what you guys were doing too much.
Maybe that's
and
what
like
it was.
I didn't really.
I'm not thinking about all the permutations of what you might do, and therefore how I should react to
or
it.
Exactly, or how it matters to me. Aside from, I want to try to get more victory points than you.
Yeah.
So that was, you know, and there are rounds where I will know, hey, I got 2 more actions left. I know I need to get to here, so I'm going to be playing this card, then this card. And it's like, okay, wait.
And that's it.
Wait. And then, but it takes long. Like, I'm not saying I take fast turns, but, like, even when I know what card I'm going to play, like, going through and be like, okay, wait, this, I put it down this guild. I'm increasing my production here. Now I can tuck this technology card.
Like one of us has a turn that's complicated. One of us has a thing where you're trying to string along everything and you're trying to like thread the needle. Yeah. But then 2 other people, it felt like during those times, just had something like add something to the board and I'm done.
Yeah. I'm going to react against this just slightly.
Please do.
That between rounds, I felt like I had enough to optimize with my hand.
Mm-hmm.
And like not every turn, sometimes I was just waiting, but for the most part there's enough to study and enough to improve on and enough to think about that I didn't feel the downtime was that bad. But I also want to say the downtime was maybe like at max 10 minutes between turns. It's not really close to an hour.
I actually did not have as much of an issue with it as you did, Candace. But I do totally recognize, like, as downtimes go, this was like there, I think for me, what it comes down to is in games where my brain is constantly going, even when there's a lot of downtime, it's because I'm thinking about all the different permutations of what all the other players might do and how I have to react and have to prepare for it. And I think maybe in this game, because I'm not as dialed into what everyone's doing, I just am like, okay, well, yeah, I have to put down, I have to get an agenda, so that'll be my agenda card. And I have to put down, I have to clear some corruption, so I'll play this card. And then I'm like, now I'm set.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Also, another thing that was a little bit of a challenge for me is that despite all the absolutely amazing top tier components, like some of the best I feel like I've ever seen, when I actually looked at the board, it was not necessarily easy for me to see what was going on the board. Mm. Because
which board?
Yeah. Like, no, I would look at it and I would, you know, you see main, a ton of like, yeah. you just sort of see a lot of stuff. But it kind of all, you have to really look, it's like, oh, those are Jordan's pieces. Those are Candace's pieces. Because even though there's cubes, there's so much like tall stuff, so many tall figures that it's like, I actually have to like take a moment to really figure out the board state. And that's a more of a quibble, but it was still like, you know, you have to, there's a lot of stuff to parse visually, you know?
Totally.
But it's still, nevertheless, like, you guys were really excited for this game. Where does it hit right now in terms of your expectations?
Do you want to go first, Candace?
No, you go first.
Okay. So I think the central puzzle of the game, the card play, is really fascinating. The game is beautifully produced. It's really interesting. I'm excited to play it a lot more. I think the longevity of the game for me is going to hinge on player interaction, how much we're actually able to get into each other's faces and, you know, prevent scoring opportunities and react to the game state.
Yeah.
Because if in the end, the game doesn't evolve past these first few plays wherein everyone's heads down, and I agree, not really paying attention to what the other players are doing, doing their own thing. That's just multiplayer solitaire. And that's really not my preferred type of game.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that it moves past that. And I suspect that it will.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to need a little bit more time and effort. And I do want to say, actually, part of the reason I expect that it will, just briefly, is in our game last night, I mean, in our game today, the scores were pretty disparate. But in our game last night, the difference was 4 points. And the scores were in the 290s and 280s. It was 289. Well,
4 points for the two highest players.
For the
other people could not catch up.
I was the difference. Sure. I was the difference. I dragged it down, everyone.
No. That's not at all what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, like, you know, we, you know, the two top players had good, solid games, but it was very close. And on the final turn or the penultimate turn, I could have made an attack, right? I could have done something to try and undermine Tim's position. And I ultimately evaluated and decided not to. And yeah. I lost, right? But if I had attacked, I think maybe the game would have gone differently. So if the game gets to a place where one or two attacks on your opponent in, you know, key locations can actually make a big difference, that will be a more exciting game. And if it gets to the point where early attacks in cycle two or even cycle one can make a big difference, that would be even better, right? So I'm hoping that player interaction eventually
it could. I have a theory that most games can actually get to that point, right? Like, there's certain games that people would call like, oh, this is super multiplayer solitaire, but like if you play it enough, then like even though it's multiplayer solitaire, you can start to anticipate what's important to that person, and then you can sort of like, you can deny them, and so that you create interaction just by knowing the game really well. But I think that maybe for a game like this, you sort of hope that the game is going to facilitate that a little bit more, but like, hopefully it will.
Yeah.
Hopefully
it's an interesting problem because it kind of straddles the line. Some people don't want that, right? Some people mm-hmm. just want a Euro style game that doesn't have interaction, and great. I think for those people, this game can definitely facilitate that because you can just agree not to attack each other.
Yes.
You've got a great sandbox to explore.
And there's a co-op mode too, right?
And there's co-op. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
What about you, Candace? How did it align with your expectations so far?
I definitely wasn't super hype. Again, like, you know, when I first heard about it, I was like, oh, this sounds cool. When I first took a look at it, I was like, oh, this is interesting. Yeah. I like the card play and everything. So I will say that like playing it today, like yesterday was like that overwhelming first play. Mm-hmm. Again, I definitely am someone who's suffering from the feeling the downtime, which is not that enjoyable for me. But I did some things. I was able to do some things today by the end that was like a little bit exciting. I was like, oh, I figured out something on my last turn where it it made me, you know, do a lot better than I did yesterday. And that's really exciting. Yeah. I would be curious to try this. You know, I'm looking forward to playing it with people where we don't need to do a teach, where everybody knows how to play, to see how that feels. And also, I was saying, because the setup is so long, it might be good to just try to run two games back to back if you have, you know, 6 hours or something. So far, I don't think I want to play it with four players unless everybody knows how to play. I would try four players again, but I'm curious to see how two feels. I'm curious to see, you know, how three feels with different scenarios. It also might be cool to just play the same scenario with the same group back to back, maybe even keep the same factions and just see how that kind of plays out.
Yeah.
But I like it. It's definitely not giving me any like tingles like Age of Innovation does. You know, not that they're the same type of game. But there's something, you know, you were talking, Ben, about like feeling like an escalation. Like, I feel like with those Terra Mystica games, every round I'm like feeling the pressure to keep up with people and do better, do more, you know, and that final push. Whereas this one, I think, again, what I've experienced in the past 2 days is like, I don't think I can catch up. And so I'll keep trying to like, you know, fight for second or third or whatever. But I think whereas in Terra Mystica games, you know, you can have those exciting moments where you get something, you do some stuff in that last round and you prepare for that end game scoring and that can notch you up or you bump up that track. And, you know, so I think we'll have to see how that goes as far as like that runaway leader. Cause I don't know. It's just, it's not like if I can't figure out a way to kind of make a comeback or come close, then it's like, oh, you know, cycle one, I think I've lost.
Yeah.
Sorry, before you give your final thoughts, Ben.
No, it's fine.
I think that's such an interesting point. So I think Age of Innovation is a cleaner game and probably a better game. This has such a broader scope to me, and that's the appeal. But I think Age of Innovation, which I love and which absolutely gives me the tingles, 100% has an even worse problem than this game in terms of not being able to make it back, to the point where after a setup in Age of Innovation, you haven't played a single turn. You've just assembled your faction and put your two houses out. You can have lost. And I know you had that one game, Candace, where you put the two down and you came back and won. But in another game that you and I played, I put down my two houses. We were playing a four-player game with Paul. And Paul and I agreed that not only that my position was the losing position, but that Paul had won the game.
I don't believe
that,
though.
And then we played
for
2.5 hours. And he won by like 20 points.
I don't believe that, though, because I came in second for that game.
20 points is not like, it's not like 100 points. 20 points is like the swing of like maybe getting a score.
Also,
like
I am not an expert at any of these Terra Mystica games. And I ended up, Paul beat me by 10 points in that game. I don't have any fancy skills. I was just doing the best I could. So I don't ever believe when it's like, oh, that combination of people, you can't win. I think there are opportunities you can find, and that's why I love those games.
But also, runaway leaders in games is not necessarily a bad thing for me. Like, again, you know, I'm like all about 18XX, and like that really can happen there, big time. But I think splatter games can happen. Yeah. But I feel like if the journey is really good and really fascinating, or especially if like you still believe that you can do something, like if you feel like you have some agency, then I think, A, that always helps. But I also think, again, if the journey's interesting, I'm still into it because I'm excited to see how things unfold. But I think here, I didn't care how our universe unfolded. I felt like... I think it's just there was a lack of urgency or stakes in this initial play, but I can imagine, I do believe that there could be emergent stakes and urgency, but I thought that the card play was super fun. I thought there was a lot of, I would say many of the elements were super, super fun in the game, but it was missing an X factor for me a little bit.
Like maybe end game scoring or something. Cause you basically, you score each cycle the same way, like you're getting more agendas theoretically, but there's no, exciting, like, oh, yeah, let's score up at the end and was, see, you know, this, where we really are.
That's how I felt my one and only play. But I do think that games should have narrative arcs to them. And by narrative doesn't mean that the game doesn't have to tell a story. The game doesn't have to be like a literal story. But I do feel like there should be a sense of escalation, and that like things are, when people do things, like you feel tension because you're like, oh no, they just did something. I have to either counter, or a window is closing for me to execute a plan or something like that. And I think I felt that strongly with this game in the initial play. But again, that could have been me just futzing around trying to understand what the hell to do. And when you do have players playing sort of at an equal experience level, all of a sudden those moments, that escalation really could kick in. And I guess that's one thing that we're gonna have to find out, yeah, discover, explore, you know? I feel like you seem unsettled. Not unsettled. I feel like there's still more on your mind, Jordan.
No. I just want to fight with Candace about the Age of Innovation. Because, maybe there's no combination of factions where you can't lose. But if you have your faction combo and you've put down your two strongholds, I think absolutely. Not only can you have lost, but you can know you've lost. And then
how
you
do you
play.
Know you've
but
lost?
But people are human. People might make mistakes. They won't slip up on things.
But here's
things.
The thing. People could make mistakes in Voidfall too. I guess my point is, like, after cycle one or maybe cycle two in this game, you might feel like you can't come back, but you can get to that feeling before the game even starts in Age of Innovation. So it's an interesting.
I can't. That's what I'm saying. Well, I can't. I always have hope in that game.
I wouldn't have. And also, Age of Innovation has like six rounds, right?
Yeah.
So that's six rounds to like kind of have a reset of like you get your income or whatever, and you can like go and do more things. And in this game, there's only three rounds. So for instance, I could only get. It limits the amount of times you can get technology. It limits the amount of times you can use your technology. It's sort of like you can only like have your reset and then come in strong. Like when you have a new round, you get your cards back. And like in a lot of games, it's like, okay, I'm going to do this, but now I can do it a little bit better and a little bit better. But here you get two more times to evolve and then it's over, you know?
I think, sorry, let me just say this back to Age of Innovation. I know you and Paul and probably other people out there have that theory of like, oh, this faction and oh, we put our buildings out, so that person's going to win or that person's definitely going to lose. Then why play?
That's why we said, let's reset it. Both Paul and I on that occasion said, let's actually reset this game.
You were crushing most of the game too.
This game?
No, that Age of Innovation
game.
No,
I wasn't.
Yeah.
It was clear from the get-go that I wasn't. It doesn't matter.
But is it losing by 20 points? Like, I feel like that
no,
is.
No, I didn't lose by 20 points. I lost by like 50 points.
Oh.
Yeah.
But no, Candace lost by 10. But
it was lost by 30, 40 points. I thought you were 20 points behind. That's the number. That was the 20 number.
No, because Paul was surprised. And then he was like, oh, I could have. So this was it. It was Paul had 155. I had 141. So
I don't
14.
Think that,
and then it was 132 and 134.
I think in a game like that, if losing by 14 points, like, yes, if you called like, oh yeah, Paul's definitely going to win, and then Paul wins by 14 points, it's like, yes, the theory has been supported that Paul's going to win, but I don't think, like, if he had won by 100 points, it's like, okay, this was clearly a superior position, but losing by 14 points in Age of Innovation, I feel like doesn't necessarily say, like, okay, what you see in the beginning of the game, there's so many things that could happen and go wrong.
Okay. I have no problem with the way that game played out. I just am saying that when you compare that game to this game,
oh,
I think
yeah,
the answer can be determined more quickly in that game. That's all I'm saying.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Okay.
I think it could be a fair point. I don't know either game well enough to know. But I do know that I got the tingles with Age of Innovation.
That's fair.
I did not get the tingles with Voidfall.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Age of Innovation is the more exciting game for sure. But
yeah. We all agree on that.
This is a TBD, but I'm excited to hear what Matt has to say, because he's really hyped about this. And I'm sure this will be circled. Well, you guys are going to circle back to this with this felt very reviewy, but like, I can't wait to have like really like for plays under the belt and real perspective on, you know, where this is going.
Yeah. I'd like us to come back when we have maybe 10 plays under our belt and really talk about the player interaction aspects of the game that we're starting to run up against and see how
different scenarios and maybe some
ideas. It would be really interesting to see how it is 10 games from now.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So everyone keep an ear out for that because that will come.
Yes. I want to say my last thing about Here I Stand.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Just a 2 minute chime in.
So
I went in not being as prepared as I wanted to be in terms of knowing the rules. And yeah, there are a lot of rules. It's a complex game, but I knew it was going to be something where, you know, we had 5 new players. We were going to sit down, you know, it's going to take a round or two. We get into it. We get a feel for it. But one of the things I loved about it was that third or either the second to last round when we had our diplomacy phase, because Here I Stand has a diplomacy phase where you get up and you go to like almost like the day phase in Blood on the Clock Tower and you go talk
to
people and you wheel and deal. And that's how Aaron actually won, is he made deals with everybody. And it was just kind of like blowing my mind that last round, the social dynamic of the game, because I'm like, France is speaking to England? Like, what are they talking about? Like, they're enemies, you know? And I'm just so curious, like, who's making what deals and everything. And Aaron came out of that round with, like, 11 cards. And we were like, we all knew he's got the most experience. He probably has some plan, but we didn't exactly see what it was until it was much too late.
I think
late.
We had to go through it. Because I was like, he was so far behind all game in terms of points. And I was like... But
he
knows what he's doing,
he's
and
Ken
just warned me. Ken was like, keep an eye.
Yeah.
And I was like, he's got something. I was like that. I was like, I know something's up. I have to be careful, but like, we have to just stumble through this. Jordan, what did you think about Here I Stand, by the way?
Well, I don't want to keep fighting with Candace, but I thought it was only okay. I mean, everyone made the same deal with Aaron in the final round. It was give him a card so he won't attack you, which is fine, you know, but it's not like, oh, England was making a trade deal with France. And so they're, you know, there was nothing really of substance other than here's a card, please don't attack me. And I think for me watching, you know, there were two players who are engaged in this battle over Protestantism and Catholicism in Germany. And, you know,
that was me.
Yeah. It was you and Drew. And it's like,
I was just trying to have babies.
Basically on both of their turns, which happened one right after the other, they're just rolling dice to turn those tokens over. And I was like, what is happening here? There's no relationship to me.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was kind of dull, but you know, it's fine. It's interesting. It's an interesting system, but it's not something that I need to.
I mean, actually, I think there's interesting parallels between it and Voidfall, which is that my impression of it, I did not get the tingles from Here I Stand. There were a lot of things I really liked and admired about it. I loved the asymmetry and the overall narrative of it. There were a lot of really cool things, but as an actual experience of playing it, I wasn't like super into it. But I also was like, that was my first time.
Yeah.
And this is a much more established game than Voidfall. So I was like, I have to acknowledge that, like, sometimes our first impressions of games, the first time we play them, really only give us so much. But then at the same time, we only have so much time and like you only get one chance to make a first impression, like the old Head and Shoulders commercials used to say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would totally agree. Like it's a lot to soak in that first game, but I was just fascinated by the asymmetry and the different interactions. And I knew I was like, I definitely want to play it again. And I, you know, I was kind of paying attention to what different people are doing and things got like definitely like a lot easier. But the other thing I just wanted to mention is our game was not 12 hours. It can be a 12 hour game, but because Aaron ended early, our game was only like six hours or so. Like,
we had a hurricane.
We were done by like 6:30 PM.
We ended on like turn 3 of
it was yeah. 4.
10,
I think it
or
was
turn
in
4 or something.
Yeah.
And how many turns can the game be?
It could be can nine, it go up to 10? 9?
Something like that.
I was grateful.
Yeah, we ended early.
I was grateful. We had a hurricane literally bearing down on us. It was such a surreal afternoon.
Yeah.
But it was. I mean, it was fun. I would play both of these games again. Like Here I Stand again. I did not click with as much as I was hoping to, but I will play Here I Stand again. I will play Voidfall again. Yeah. I will play. I don't know. Did I have a tepid experience with something else? I need to have a third.
Tepid. Wow. I feel like our discussion of Voidfall has really gone downhill.
Tepid.
Hell. Yeah. It's tepid.
Actually, it was not tepid. It's sometimes like I find that like it just in general this happens with people. But you know, when you start talking about something and you whip yourself into a frenzy, and by the end of the conversation, like it sucked. It
yeah,
did not.
I definitely feel
fun.
That.
I legitimately had a lot of fun. I actually don't want the negatives to outweigh the headline, which still was a lot of fun. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think if you're a multiplayer solitaire focused player, it's great 100% no matter what. And then if you need more interaction, it remains to be seen.
We're Jordan, I was bracing for you to just attack me like crazy. I thought you were going to come in and manhandle me. And I was like,
oh, well, you had a nice pointed tension? Remark there. You were like, what did you say? You said, then you might finally be in the lead. And I was like, okay, I should leave Ben alone.
Oh, yeah. As Jordan was like crushing us.
I was like, don't you. Actually, if you attacked me, it literally would have been fine. But I was bracing all game. I was like, at some point, Jordan's going to come out. He's going to come after us. But you didn't. You actually really didn't.
Yeah. I felt like you guys said, I was winning. So I didn't have to. But after yesterday's game, where it was very close, my threshold to attack is much lower. I want to attack earlier.
You gotta let the beast out.
You gotta do something. Jordan,
right? Yeah, Jordan. You had military focused people,
no,
right?
No, you had a military focus, Ben.
By the way, I felt like I actually played a fairly aggressive game. I mean, I was like, every round I was like, surprise! Moving
aggressive, like against the Voidborn, yeah. Right?
Right, but then that's the game encourages that. I feel like the game encourages aggression towards the Voidborn more than aggression towards each other, because we also, at least in this scenario, we start off actually relatively far away from each other.
Right. Right. You know? And in the scenario we played yesterday, though, they're all those wormholes that made a lot of hexes adjacent to each other.
So that's interesting. Yeah. Because that's interesting also to see how, from scenario to scenario, if like there's one that like really hits a sweet spot. Because, you know, again, the game, even though it's several hours, it still in many ways felt short to me in terms of like you don't have enough of something. Those moments where you then get your cards back and then you come in. But this, when you come in, you're coming in a little bit harder because you got more tech, you got more resources, you got more this, and you got more that. And so you don't have like that. Yeah, I'm like, by the time I got close to you, the game was over.
Ben wants to play the 12 cycle version.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Is there a 12 cycle?
No, no, no. Coming soon, an expansion to Voidfall cycles 4 through 12.
The map almost
All day.
But listen, that book with all the scenarios was like, that was like a Cheesecake Factory menu. It was huge.
It's huge.
And it was also spiral bound. And I'm sure it did not come with lovely bread. But I wonder if there are some like sort of smaller compact maps that are really intense. Because I actually feel like maybe that intensity of like player on player, even though like, you know, I don't like it when I'm thrust into Jordan's crosshairs because he's a killer. I don't like it, but that might be the intensity that I'm looking for. Maybe so. I need to be thrashed around by Jordan a little bit.
And we should say we played yesterday a scenario that was aggressiveness 2, complexity 3. And today it was 3 and 3. And each of those statistics is weighted out of 4. So we were towards the top end of complexity and aggression, and we still maybe didn't see quite as much as we were hoping for.
Yeah.
But I also think as players get better and more efficient, we'll move out to the center more quickly, and then we'll get in each other's faces more, and that'll be good.
Yeah, let's put a pin in Voidfall.
Yes,
let's and for people who are interested, don't put too much weight in the negatives, because we're all new at this, and it's just like, this is just like the thought. We're just being honest to exactly what our experiences have been. And also you have to go, Candace. So we're just going to end this. Okay. So, I'm not going to sugarcoat this whatsoever.
That was great though. It was great. I'm glad we got to play back to, you know, sort of back to back.
Yeah. And I want to reduce, before we end, the negativity that I expressed towards Here I Stand, which I think is a really interesting game that models history in an interesting way.
It's not tepid. It wasn't a tepid experience.
No, you could be negative about it because that one has been well established and like there's lots
it's
of news about it.
It's not a hot new
it.
Game. Yeah.
It's not a hot new game. If it was a hot new game and it's like, oh, we played it once and let me tell you something, I didn't like this thing and no one should ever buy it, that's maybe like not quite as
could have also been the faction you played too. Maybe. I don't know.
No, I'll try it again. It was interesting. Yeah. You know,
I'm excited to play again. But of course, I'm also excited to play more TI4 because TI4 is on my 10 for 10.
Okay.
10,
great 10 out 10. Outro comment since we were talking about Age of Innovation.
Yeah.
I found the rules and got the player boards printed for the Twilight Imperium faction versions of Gaia Project. So we're going to do Gaia Imperium at some point.
I would like to play Gaia.
I think it's going
to
be a riot.
Is it all 17 factions?
I think they did 16 of them. They left out the Soul. The Space Bros. But I read the rules. Like, there's a concept of owning Mechatel Rex that you're like racing to
I'm
do.
So into
all this. The wow. All of the factions are, these are fan made factions that are Gaia factions, but made from TI people. So they all are relative, like the Jolnar are all about like tech stuff, so they can move up the those tech tracks a little better by only spending like 3 knowledge or something. So everything is tailored towards TI4. So that's probably going to happen before I play TI4 is where, Gaia Imperium.
Where,
you,
where do people find that if they want to do that also?
I would say just Google search. It's on BGG. Okay. Or you can go to the BGG Gaia Project page and look under files and maybe just search like Twilight Imperium.
Okay.
But yeah, someone put the faction boards. And I got the faction boards off of Etsy because someone prints them for you. You know, I don't forget how much it was. It wasn't that much, but... So I got the boards printed, but you can probably just print them at home also. But it has all the rules for them. And I was like, this sounds fun. And it adds a trade phase as well.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. So it's,
that's interesting.
I think it's going to be wacky.
The question is,
what do you trade? Like, I give you 2 workers for $3?
I think it's something it's something with resources or like a conversion thing, but it's a new phase. And like, just like in TI, how you can... have a certain amount of commodities, yeah. You know, like the lions are better at this trade phase than other
if
people.
If the companies were smart, they would like co-license or co-put out that and yeah. just make that a game.
Well, I think it would be a bestseller.
I want them to add Sidereal Confluence on top.
Oh, snap.
A real-time trading phase.
I need to revisit that one.
I've never played that. I would really like to play that.
Oh,
I love the. I've always loved the idea of like sort of economic games where like not everyone has access to resources and you have to like really interact with people to get the stuff.
It's fun.
Like a real economy. Yeah. But anyway, TI4 is on my 10x10 challenge. I played it twice this year, so I still have 8 more to go. Maybe this will count towards
it. Do you think you're going to make it?
And 9 more magnates?
What's your optimism level?
I would like to, but I will say... I had put 18-17 on my 10x10. I was like, this is never getting to the table.
18-17 and TI4?
Well, the idea was that it was going to try to inspire, like, who knows? Yeah. Like,
how many 18-17 plays do you have?
Like, negative 12. Like, zero. Like, I cannot get to that table. But the reason why I'm just mentioning that is that I took 18-17 off and I put Sky Mines on.
There you go.
Sky
You're
Mines
already
is,
like a couple games in.
I'm 2 games in. So on that note, in honor of Sky Mines and Voidfall and all those wonderful things, you've been listening to Game Brain, produced and edited by Matthew Robinson, Tom Donnelly, Trey Alsop, and Ben Mandelker. Special thanks to Daedalus for incredible music. More on Daedalus at GameBrainPod.com. And thanks to Edamar Pelleg for incredible graphics. Be sure to check him out on Instagram at Kerbuloni or his website, Kerbuloni.com. You can reach us by email at contact@GameBrainPod.com. Thanks for listening, and go play some games with friends or make some friends with games.
You know how other podcasts do those outro things?
Yeah.
Should we do one of those?
Wait,
I think you just did it.
I know. That's what I'm saying.